Welcome to the Pop Culture Pod Podcast. Now let's begin.
I am Locutus of Borg. Resistance is futile. Your life as it has been is over. From this time forward, you will service us.
Mr. Worf. Fire.
Well, hello, fellow podcast listener, and welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I am your host this week. My name is Chris Lockhart, and we got a full crew tonight for this episode, Podcast Time Machine. And for Podcast Time Machine, we're going to be talking about the summer of 1990. But before we get to that, I want to introduce everybody. First up is my co-host in crime, Mr. Kevin Decent. How's it going, Kevin?
It's going well, Chris. I'm excited for everyone here. You know, thankfully, we're only going back to 1990, because if we were going back any further, we wouldn't have seatbelts in the back seat for all four of us to take this ride.
That is true. That is true. And also joining me is my other co-host in crime, Mr. Jason Roberts. How's it going, Jason?
It's going pretty good.
Excellent. And last but not least, we have a good friend of the podcast. He hasn't been on in a while, but he has come back, and that's Mr. Richard Reeder. How's it going, Richard?
Good, good. Settled in now. I've been moving, and good to go. So happy to be here.
Yep. Well, moving and having a baby. Like, how old's your baby now? Like
9 months.
9 months. Holy smokes! Wow.
Really?
Time flies.
Busy, busy.
Has it been 9 months? Really?
Do you feel like an adult yet, or are you still waiting for the real adults to show up?
Oh yeah, no, definitely the real adulting has started, especially now with the house. Like, as soon as we moved in, just everything went wrong, and we were like, oh crap, all right, well, I guess we're going to Home Depot every single day of the week. So it's been interesting. We just had our final, hopefully what will be our final visit from our electrician. And he upgraded a bunch of stuff today, and hopefully that will be the last showing from him. Mm-hmm. So I think we only need like a painter left, and we're getting an energy audit done to make the home more efficient and get a bunch of rebates on getting new furnace and air conditioner and all that, because we want to be as energy efficient as we can. So far, I think I've saved 1,300 watts just with switching over all the light bulbs in the house too. Nice. Which is really fun. It's really fun to see the like, to actually see the numbers, you know what I mean? And especially once it gets up to that much, it becomes very impressive and kind of fun to actually try and beat yourself and be like, all right, well, maybe this space I can use a 2-watt LED bulb. Like, maybe I'll just use something battery power. How can I get solar in here? Like,
wow.
I was going to replace my furnace with like an energy efficient furnace, but my furnace is so good. Like, it's a Lennox, right? And I actually think it was built in 1990, so it's a 30-year-old furnace. And it's, like, I've had a couple guys come in over the years to service it, and they tell me, like, this is, like, don't throw this away. Keep it until it dies, because this is like the Cadillac.
Oil or natural gas?
It's natural gas. But it's like the Cadillac of furnaces. It's awesome.
Oh, that's awesome. The one that we're replacing is actually 26 or 27 years old this year. We've had two or three different service people because, you know, when they come to give you quotes, right, they send all the whole shebang and make you feel important so that you'll spend, you know, $10,000 with them, right?
Yeah.
So, just knowing that this furnace is, you know, like three or like two thirds or more of my own life. Like, that's pretty intense, you know? Yeah. It's pretty crazy. But the old ones, they lasted forever, right? They don't, it's so true. They don't make things like they used to.
No, they don't.
And that ties in well with this episode.
Yeah, and that's what the service guy told me. He's like, you know, I could sell you a new one, but chances are it'll crap out before this one does.
So, yeah, well, and there's no point on it. Like, the most energy or eco-friendly thing to do, maybe not energy efficient, but eco-friendly thing to do, is to keep it until it dies. Mm-hmm. Keep it until you can't use it anymore. Because, like, one of the biggest problems when it comes to efficiency or whatever is just the waste. Right? Like, you're wasting your own money. Like, a lot of people upgrade things so often when they don't need to.
Yeah.
Just keep it longer until it dies.
Yep, exactly.
I think that's my wife's plan for me.
Excellent. All right, so this episode was originally delayed, and I apologize for that, dear listener. That was my fault. I had had some issues on our original recording date, which was June 3rd. So now here we are, a few weeks later, and we are taking our first trip through the podcast time machine. And we are going back to the summer of 1990. And why the summer of 1990? Well, what got me thinking about this was last month was the 30th anniversary of the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. And they did... like a Zoom Skype, no, it wasn't Skype, it was Zoom thing where they had like a lot of the actors and voice actors and producers and stuff in that movie all come together and do like a, you know, where they did a reading of scenes from the movie, and then they each, you know, shared some, you know, tidbit of reminiscences of, you know, what they did in the movie, what they remembered, all that kind of stuff. So it got me thinking, you know, that was a pretty awesome summer. I remember, you know, a lot of cool things came out that summer. So we're going to go through a list, you know, of things that we each remember from that summer. And yeah, it's 30 years ago. I can't believe it. You know, from a personal standpoint, like, that was the first summer I went to summer camp. I was gone for, I think it was 7 days, which was like the longest I'd ever been away from home, you know, aside from, like, well, even going to the grandparents, I don't think I ever was that, you know, spent 7 days away. And I just remember having such a great time. You know, like, I went with a bunch of buddies from school, and my cousin Tyler went with us, and just having a blast. And I went, I guess, the next summer, another time, and that was it. I only ever went to summer camp, like, twice, unfortunately. You know, one of those things you look back, you know, hindsight being 2020, you know, like... Because then I was going into junior high, and, you know, I didn't want to... It wasn't cool to go to camp anymore. That was a kid thing to do. But even though they had teenage camps, I wish I had went. I really do. I tried talking my kids into going, but none of them wanted to go. Like, none of them would go to camp. I'm like, come on, you know, I'll pay for it. You'll have a blast. You know, you go swimming, you meet friends, you might kiss a girl or a, you know, a boy if it's one of the girls or whatever, you know, whatever they want. I mean, that was one of the first times I ever kissed a girl. Was that summer, like 30 years ago at summer camp. A girl named Carol. I still remember her name all these years later. Have no idea whatever happened to her, but yeah, that was the first girl I ever kissed. Yeah, let's just go around the table and have some quick reminiscences of summer of 1990, just from a personal standpoint. What do you remember of anything from that summer? And Kevin, we'll start with you. What do you remember about summer of 1990?
So summer 1990, I believe we had just moved my mom, my brother, and I into a different house. Sounds like it's lining up about right. And summer 1990, I would have been 12. So there was, you know, getting used to a different area, figuring out where it was okay to go, where it was safe to go, mm-hmm. what kids in the neighborhood were friends, which ones, you know, we should probably avoid. And then I actually, the place, the house we were living in, I don't know why, but somehow I ended up with the biggest bedroom. Hmm. And I'm still not sure why, because usually mom or dad or both take the bigger bedroom.
Yep.
Like most of the time, that's just how it works. But somehow I did. And, you know, as my comic interests got bigger and, you know, wanting to have my own stuff and all, that room was full of just trash. I don't know how I didn't get in more trouble. But I was always, like, I was riding my bikes. We were in our new neighborhood. I would go over to my old neighborhood and see people. Coincidentally, downtown is right in between, so the comic store and the department stores and all that stuff. And some of the things we'll talk about later, I remember, oh, we got to do that too. Oh, we have to do that. And you got to make plans and you got to, you know, get mom to drive you or, you know, figure out when your friends are free and all sort, you know, all of that stuff. And it, again, like we'll discuss later on. I also think because of the age I was at then, it was also an age of, I used to only think you could do things this way. And now I'm understanding you could do things this way too. Mm-hmm. So a lot of learning was happening as well.
Excellent. Jason, what do you remember of, from a personal level, from summer of 1990?
I'm trying. It's a lot of Yoo-hoo. I remember, like, we used to live in Ojai, California. And there's the street we lived on was Gridley Road. And all my friends, like, two of them lived down the street, and we had to go up a block and around. But remember, we always had to use our bikes. It's like, just to go over to see if someone was available and just going back and forth. I remember there was a huge pasture that we used to have in the back and actually making tree houses. And then I remember a lot of it started changing when one of our friends had a Nintendo. And then I think it was the following year he wound up getting a Super Nintendo. So all of us would always kind of like meet in a neutral area and just kind of make the trek over to his house because he was the furthest one away. And things like that were just, it really just stick out in my memory.
Yeah, absolutely. And Richard, what do you remember of summer 1990?
Well, not a whole lot. For me, it's mostly what pop culture happened in 1990. I mean, like, I was 5 at the time, so I was a little young. But I do remember, I think it might have been at my brother's wedding in 1990 or so when – and this would match up perfectly with 1992, is I actually got my first Hypercolor set of pajamas. And I believe it was 1990, especially because I remember getting it and I thought it was so cool, but my sister told me that it was lame. And I was like, okay, well, so now I'm thinking back on it. I'm like, yeah, that lines up because Hypercolor was like, you know, mid late 80s, and then it crashed, right? And we haven't seen it since, even though it's the coolest thing in the world. Like, I would totally rock Hypercolor right now. Like, I don't care about anything. I will rock that, and I will take my baby out and get some Starbucks and look douchey. I don't care. I will do that. But so I remember, like, Hypercolor for me was amazing. But I mean, as far as, like, what came out that summer, too, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's so big things, and I remember being in Florida right around that time as well. That's where I got my my presents, and so getting the American Snacks when I was around that age, like right around, you know, the early 90s, the snacks were on point because everything was a cartoon, so everything I was watching on TV I could also eat or I could drink it, and so that was quite incredible for me, especially in this, because in Canada we don't really have that as much, right? We've got a lot more restrictions on our food, so, you know, it was kind of fun to be in the States a lot when I was younger.
Excellent. All right, well, let's get into talking about the pop culture aspect of the summer of 1990. So, like, yeah, when I say summer, I'm thinking like May till September, like, you know, those prime summer months. So I mean, there are other things that came out during that time, but the list I've compiled is all movies, TV shows, that sort of thing that took place during the summer months of 1990. And then I've got a song list as well, but that is not broken down just for the summer months. It's just like a 1990s music list. So I'll kind of go over that. And then whatever you guys want to throw in there as well, by all means. So first of all, I want to talk about the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. As I've mentioned, you know, that was the idea for this episode, was based on that 30th anniversary celebration that they did last month. And it just blew my mind, you know, that, you know, it's been 30 years since that movie came out. Like, I remember we used to have a drive-in, you know, it's only like, I don't know, a 5-minute drive from where I live now. For years, and unfortunately it closed when I was 15, so I never actually got to go to it myself as a driver. But I only ever went to the drive-in for like 4 different movies that I can recall. And one of them was the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie. And I remember my mom was really cool about it. She took me and my buddy Mike and my cousin Leonard and my Aunt Rita, and we went to the Burger Baron. And she actually ordered us pizza. So we got to take pizza to the Ninja Turtles movie at the drive-in. And, yeah, I just remember loving that movie. You know, it was fantastic. And I will argue and say, even to this day, I still think it's the best Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie ever. You know, I'm not a fan of the Michael Bay-produced movies. And yeah, unfortunately, in my opinion, with, you know, Secret of the Ooze and Turtles in Time and all that kind of stuff, I felt they went too kiddie with it. It's kind of like the Batman movies. Like the Tim Burton 1989 Batman was just amazing, and it was dark, and it needed to be dark. But then with Batman Returns, then they started getting a little goofy and cartoony with it. And then when Batman Forever came, they went completely off the rails, like, for campy and silly, and it wasn't the same. And I kind of feel that's what happened with the Turtles. Like, for the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, they did such a good job. Like, it was the right tone. Like, kids could still watch it. Like, it wasn't ultra-violent or anything, but it was dark enough. Like, it was effective. You know, but you could still watch it, you know, as with kids. But then when they did the second movie, they just went like Batman Forever on it. Like, it was just too goofy, too silly. And unfortunately it just sucked. And the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie was, you know, the last project that Jim Henson himself worked on, which is kind of a cool distinction, you know, before his passing, unfortunately. And I really like Judith Hogue, who plays April O'Neil. She's the best April O'Neil, in my opinion. I really like that actress. And she's still beautiful, by the way. Like, when they did that 30th anniversary get-together, like, she's the one that hosted it. And I swear to God, she looks like she aged, like, you know, maybe a year in the last 30 years. Like, she's still amazingly beautiful. And yeah, like it was, you know, good voice cast, you know, good actors, you know, good action. And yeah, I really wish they would just make a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie again in this style. Like, you know, this tone, you know, the suits worked. You know, I think even like today, like, you know, if you tweak it a little bit with CGI, you could even do a little bit more. But don't do the Michael Bay route. Like, that's just way too much CGI. But yeah, I love this movie. So, Kevin, I'll throw it over to you. What are your thoughts on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the movie?
I mean, that movie was just a phenomenon, much like Batman the year previous. So big, everyone had to go see it. Ninja Turtles was huge, and I know it still continues to this day, and every couple years they restart it. But I don't think it's ever been as big as it was then. with, you know, the movie, the cartoons, all the cross merchandising and everything. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was because my brother and I both have a birthday in May. And I don't know if it was like his birthday, mine, just for the heck of it. But I remember a group going to see the movie. It was one of those things where even parents were like, there's no way we're stopping these kids from seeing this movie. Mm-hmm. We just have to accept that we have to take the kids to this movie. So we don't have to hear them beg to go to this movie in the entire summer. Like, let's just do it and get it over with. But we had a blast. And I kind of think like Batman coming out the year beforehand trained a lot of us mm-hmm. for this isn't going to be like the cartoon. It's going to be the movie version. It's going to be what we can do in the movie. And some things are going to have to change, but most of it's going to be the same. And that's okay. Because, yeah, there's stuff like I remember Raphael's the leader. Raphael's not the leader of Ninja Turtles. Why are you doing this?
Yeah.
But ultimately, it doesn't affect the plot of the story at all. It's more of a throwaway line. So why get yourself hung up on it? The soundtrack was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Everyone had that cassette, knew it forward and backwards, could sing all the songs. And that's before Ninja Rap, because that's in the sequel. Mm-hmm. But and I think like as much you said if they added like little CGI extras or tweaks, and that's the thing, if you it holds up so well because of that Henson work, mm-hmm. because it's real material there, and it looks beautiful still 30 years later. It looks so cool and so well done. It's a real like achievement of a movie too.
Yep.
And I think like one of the things I was getting at before. When I was talking about starting to think a different way is accepting different versions of something, mm-hmm. which would have happened. You know, I'm 12. I've had one version of Batman and one version of Ninja Turtles. Now here's a different version and it's still good and I can still like it. And it's not exactly the same, but at its core, it's still the same story. So I need to roll with it. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, oh, okay, well I can just enjoy this for what it is. You know, as much as some of us get hung up on, like, details for, you know, sci-fi movies and fantasy movies, superhero and stuff like that, like, ultimately, it doesn't matter. Was it a good story? Did they completely ruin it or just do a different take and it's still a good story? Mm-hmm. That Ninja Turtles movie is fantastic. I hope all the time my kid has a Ninja Turtles face. Hasn't happened yet, but I would love to share this with him.
Excellent. Jason, your thoughts, sir.
I actually still have the old VHS tape.
Nice.
And it still has it cracks me up because Pizza Hut was a huge thing. Like it was mm-hmm. like they're all intertwined and everything else, and it still has this campy commercial with this little league team that goes out and the kid and everything, he sucks at the game, but he manages to catch the last ball. But it's just funny how it's like little things you remember. But I remember, yeah, like you said, much like how Batman was the year prior, because I remember that was huge. And me and my dad going, and we waited in line for like almost 2 hours just to go see the movie. And it was seeing that definitely kind of altered my views on a lot of things. And it was just, of course, then I also kind of grew up with like RoboCop and, you know, Aliens. And, you know, we also have Predator. Mm-hmm. My dad was very, you know, I don't want to say strict on movies, but he definitely let me watch a lot of movies. In hindsight, when I watch them back again, I'm like, maybe I was a little too young for that. But at the same time, I'm like, that's cool. But it was so when Ninja Turtles was coming out, it was my favorite show, the cartoons. And so when the movie was going to come out, I was just all about it. And I drove my dad nuts and my mom nuts about it. And so finally they both took me and I remember watching it. And it's just like, as a kid, I kept looking for Bebop and Rocksteady and I was kind of like, why are they not? And then not understanding. And I'm like, okay, but the movie's still cool. And it was just, the puppetry that they did. And it just, it's perfect. I mean, like you said, it's timeless. It doesn't, and we watched it again recently and it holds up. Mm-hmm. Like it holds up a lot better than the third one. The third one is just you know, like, oh, this is a little rough. It's starting, you know, budget cuts. But it's like, it's, I don't know, it's darker. It had Casey Jones. I enjoyed him. He was funny. And it was just that and the fact, too. I love this scene. It was straight out of the comics. It was Raphael leaving the movie theater. And, you know, just kind of like wearing the trench coat and the hat and everything else and just trying to hide. But, yeah, it was definitely one of my favorites. And although I don't like the Michael Bay, I kind of groaned through it. I did enjoy the fact that they finally included Bebop and Rocksteady. Yeah. And that part I was excited for. Everything else was just kind of like, all right, you introduced Craig for about 5 minutes and you took him out. It wasn't really, okay, that's fine. But, yeah, no, that was definitely a big one. I think what really stood out most, I remember Dick Tracy was a really big one that I remember that kind of came out. It was like, it was a little bit after Ninja Turtles when Dick Tracy had come out. I remember those two were very close together.
Yep, that's actually next on my list.
Yeah.
Richard, before we talk about Dick Tracy, what are your remembrances of the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie?
Well, the original movie and the subsequent amount of toys and, of course, the cartoon that was going on and, like, just the whole, like, at that age, because I was, like, you know, 4, 5, 6 when Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was getting really, really big. So I was the perfect age for them to really throw commercials at. So I remember just being psycho crazy for it. And I don't think my parents brought me to the theater to see the movie. I would have been way too young at the time. But I do remember seeing it probably later. I'm guessing, at home and just like watching the tape out. Like my dad also had the beta version of it. I remember that, very fondly. And I basically wore that tape out just the amount of times watching it. And, thankfully I got a few Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles toys, around that time as well. And that movie was insane. And the fact that it does still hold up, and it's sad in a way. I almost wish that we were talking about the third one, because the third one was actually the first movie that I watched when I moved into my new house here, on my projector outside on the patio, like at night, whatever, right? Like I was just like, oh my gosh, like it just debuted on Netflix. This is perfect. I'm going to totally watch this. And I got 3/4 of the way through and went, I don't really need to finish this. Even though I love that movie, like it's probably my favorite one, but I think I was like 2 drinks deep and I was just like, I'm too drunk to even watch this now. It's just I've gone past the point of it's funny drunk, and now it's just I want to do something better. Mm-hmm. That first one still holds up from the last time I remember seeing it. And on top of that, it's kind of cool how much like Batman and a few select other movies in the quote unquote superhero genre at the time that were dark and are now kind of cool again in a way, because everything now is a lot of it is very dark nowadays, right? So it still totally fits in. So they could almost do a carbon copy shot for shot, just redo it, update everything, but make everything exactly the same, essentially. And it would probably still work because that movie was, you know, dark, especially for compared to like the cartoon as well, right? So that was kind of a shocker for me, I remember.
Yeah, well, I would love them to do a sequel to this, like with the original, you know, costumes with, you know, the Jim Henson style costumes, and then have like Bebop and Rocksteady and, you know, that sort of thing. Like I'd love to see something like that.
Agreed.
But all right, well, Jason already mentioned it. Dick Tracy the movie. It came out, I believe, June of 1990. And I can't believe that this movie came out the same summer as Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Like, I literally did not remember. Like, so, like, there's a lot of good movies on this list that came out that summer. But Dick Tracy, I just remember loving that movie. I mean, the cast is amazing. You know, Warren Beatty, Madonna, Dustin Hoffman, Paul Sorvino, Al Pacino. you know, just a stellar cast, and I love the aesthetic of it. I love, you know, the bright colors. I love the, you know, like they really paid good homage to, you know, the comic strip. You know, like it really felt like you were, you know, in that comic strip in the, you know, 1930s, or I think it was the 30s that it took place. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. And also, the action figures were the same scale as the Ninja Turtle action figures. So you could use the Dick Tracy action figures to play with the Ninja Turtle action figures. So you could have, like, the Ninja Turtles going up against mobsters and stuff. It was awesome. You know, I really loved this movie, and I again, the Ninja Turtle movie I have, and Dick Tracy, I just bought the Blu-ray a few years ago, and, yeah, it's still a great film. So, Jason, what are your thoughts on the Dick Tracy movie?
Oh, I loved it. It was, I remember I was real little, just whatever I can find, memorabilia-wise or action figure-wise. It was just like, I remember, as a little, McDonald's had the glass cup, like when they used to give out like glass cups. Mm-hmm. I think the last one they did was Batman Forever. I think that was like the last glass cups that they ever gave out. But I remember I got, I think three, they had like 10 of them, and I got three of them. But it was just like collecting all those. And then I remember at some point my mom and dad, they took me to Disneyland, and Dick Tracy was still roaring at that time. And they had little kiosks or something like that all set up and whatever, but they had a whole bunch of Dick Tracy, like, paraphernalia, everything you think of. And I wound up getting a Dick Tracy policeman badge. Hmm. And, like, I still have it. I think it's in a garage somewhere, and this thing is, like, you know, old. But it's... like, I love the movie. It was, I just, anything of that era is just, I just absolutely love. And I love the cartoony over exaggeration. It was perfect with, you know, it's just like, mm-hmm. like with itchies and mumbles. And it was just kind of like, you know, it was just, they nailed it. Like, it was, we haven't seen a movie anywhere that came remotely close on how they did it. They haven't made anything like that since. And it's like, I've always wished they made more, because he has so many tales and so many, just like, but they never went anywhere with it. But it was, I loved it. The overall tone, it was a classic detective, you know. But.
Well, and I think he suspected they might only do the one. So I think that's why, like, they threw everything into it. Like, you had the blank, you had Flat Top, Prune Face, Big Boss. You know, what was his name? Lips Malone, I think. 88 no, Keys. Lips. You know, like all these characters from
No Face, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like it was awesome. Rich, what are your thoughts on the Dick Tracy movie?
The Watch.
The Watch.
Like, the Watch. Yeah. That's the Watch. I mean, again, I don't remember exactly the first time I saw this film, but I do remember seeing the film and it blowing my mind. like, and to this day, it's funny. I actually was just thinking while you guys were talking of when the last time I actually watched the movie was, and I don't think I've watched it almost maybe since I was a kid. So I might have to go back and rewatch it now. But the visual style of the movie is just so in your face. Right. And mm-hmm. the creativity behind the pieces like the watch, and then also the characters as well, and how well it transferred over. And it's just so well done. Like Jason was saying, it's very intense. But for me, it's all about that watch. And also, I'm pretty sure it was the first time that I remember Tommy guns being really cool to me as a child.
Yep.
So, and I also like the fact that I just looked it up. It was the number 9 ranked movie for the entire year in 1990 for total gross at the box office. It's kind of interesting. And it came out 2 days before my birthday.
Yeah, I definitely remember, like, the McDonald's promotion for sure. Like, they were definitely pushing that movie big
deal. Yeah, well, and that's all you needed back then too, right? And especially for, because was, again, I haven't seen it in a long time. Like, it's not overly violent, right? It's kind of like PG violent, right? Like a, like 90s PG violent, but still.
It's almost like the old Adam West violence, you know, like the Batman. They don't have the bam and pop, but it's definitely the shadow, like the shadow boxing, and then they obviously have your gunfights and everything.
Yeah,
but it's definitely kind of, yeah, it's over the top cartoony.
So when you're aiming at children, you know what I mean? Like, you get McDonald's on your side, and you've basically got a home run no matter what. You know, you're going to recoup your money, guaranteed, at minimum. Which, by the way, they came in at just over $100 million in the box office.
Hmm. Kevin, your thoughts on Dick Tracy?
So this is one, I don't know when it started, but in the last couple years, everyone's been rediscovering this movie and loving it. When it came out, I remember hating it and being horribly disappointed. And again, this is another example, and I think I know a movie coming up later on, so they'll tie it all in. But I thought I knew what a comic movie or show was going to be, and this didn't fit into that box. Batman fit in there, Ninja Turtles did. The Flash TV show was on this fall in 1990 with John Wesley Shipp. Mm-hmm. I'm familiar with all of these characters, and the shows were, you know, close enough. Dick Tracy was not, the comic strip was not in my local paper, so I didn't have anything for that. The cartoon was brought back when this movie came out. That cartoon was, we'll say, a product of its time. Mm-hmm. When it re-aired in 1990. 30 years later, it looks even worse. Mm-hmm. For a lot of the things on it. But that's like it for my exposure to it. And then I see the movie, I'm like, I don't know what this is. This isn't a comic to me. Because in addition to all the merchandise, every comic magazine or like special issues of, like, you know, special all-comic Starlog magazine or whatever it was, had Batman, Flash, and Dick Tracy on the cover. And then they'd be like, more comic superheroes coming. I'm like, one of these is not like the other. And I hated it. But it, as Chris knows, for other shows, there were things that came along before I was ready for it. Dick Tracy's being a big one. Like the Conan black and white comics I mentioned on a previous episode. Mm-hmm. Was not for me as a kid buying Image. They're for me now. You know, I wish I bought them then and just, like, waited until I was ready for it. And Dick Tracy, I know, I'm like, oh my God, this movie's groundbreaking. It's original. There is nothing else like this. This is a love letter. This is high concept. There's so much here. And I understand people championing it now. Mm-hmm. That's tough to say. Because, like, one of the ones for me, is a side tangent, the Speed Racer movie from, what, like 10 years ago at this point now?
Oh my gosh. Yep, really?
It's incredible. That movie's incredible. There's so much cool stuff in it. I bought a Blu-ray player. I bought a Blu-ray player just to see that movie. I love that movie so much.
Okay.
But see, that's I'm sorry.
It's a really colorful and fun movie, though. Like, if nothing else, it is a visual feast of a movie.
It's a super pretty movie.
Yeah, like, it's pretty incredible.
This is the first movie I ever saw on Blu-ray, which is why I bought one. I'm like, I can see a spider web in the background. That's how crystal clear this is. That's incredible.
Yeah.
But our little interaction right here, flip it, and that's how I felt for Dick Tracy back then. I was just like, this is garbage. What is this? I can't stand it all. And now I'm like, oh my God, how was this not my wheelhouse? I bought Batman. I bought Ninja Turtles, or I asked someone to buy it for me at my age, you know, back then. I didn't care about Dick Tracy. I could have gotten, when KB Toys was still around, I could have bought the figures for like $1 each because they were just sitting there. No one wanted them. And now I'm like, man, I missed out on something. Maybe if me and all the other like-minded kids enjoyed it a little more, we would have gotten those sequels.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys know that like a year ago, I believe it was Archie was supposed to do a brand new Dick Tracy comic?
Hmm.
And the day they announced it, Warren Beatty shut it down.
Hmm.
Warren Beatty still owns certain copyrights and certain things have to go through him 30 years later.
No, I know that. Mm-hmm. Well, isn't he still trying to get the movie remade? And isn't he still trying to make it and star in it too?
Yep.
From last I remember.
Yep. So anything that's created other than the comic strip, because the comic strip existed before the movie.
Yeah.
So other than that comic strip, anything new has to go through him.
Because anything new would be more than likely based on his art style and the way that he took it.
Yep, considered derivative.
Yeah, exactly. Which is also just crazy in itself.
Yep. Also, with all the makeup effects in the movie, which are incredible, there's so many famous actors you don't realize are in there because of all the makeup. Why didn't they give Warren Beatty the Tracy nose?
Yeah.
I mean, I know why, because he's the star, but it's still, you know, it's funny we didn't get that.
Well, speaking of the makeup, one of the guys, I can't remember which one it was, Doug Drexler, I believe, was one of the makeup artists on Dick Tracy. Don't quote me on that, but I know it was a Next Generation. Like, he went from Dick Tracy to next Star Trek Next Generation. I want to say it's Doug Drexler, but I'm not entirely sure. But anyway, I'm going to use that as a segue to talk about the next item on my list, and that is the Star Trek The Next Generation Best of Both Worlds cliffhanger that took place during the summer of 1990, June of 1990. Now, and I know I've shared this story before, but I'll quickly share it again. You know, 30 years ago, you know, like, this was the first Star Trek cliffhanger ever. Like, it never happened on the original series. It never happened, you know, in the first two seasons of The Next Generation. And then it happened here, where Captain Picard gets abducted by the Borg. He gets turned into Locutus of Borg. You know, the Enterprise could destroy the Borg ship, but in order to destroy it, the Enterprise itself will be destroyed. And then the episode ends with Captain Picard on the bridge of, or not the bridge, but on the Borg cube as Locutus of Borg, telling the crew of the Enterprise that they're going to be assimilated and that resistance is futile and your life as it has been is over. From this time forward, you will service us. And then everyone's looking at Riker because he's in command of the Enterprise now, and he tells Mr. Worf to fire the weapon, you know, that they have set up to destroy the Borg ship, which will destroy them too. You know, cut to black, says to be continued, you know, and I remember watching that at my aunt's house at the time, and I remember just being blown away, my jaw literally hitting the floor, because I think I was laying on my stomach, you know, on the floor in front of the TV watching this go down, and I remember running over to my aunt's copy of TV Guide to see, you know, what they said about next week's episode, and it did say in TV Guide, part two, next Friday. So I was all excited, and I made a point of tuning in to see a rerun, and I was like, what's going on here? Like, obviously, you know, the TV station screwed up, you know, like, where's part two? And then I found out after the fact that, no, that was a cliffhanger, much in the, you know, Who Shot JR style, you know, where you had to wait till the fall to find out who shot JR. We had to find out till fall what was going to happen on Star Trek The Next Generation. You know, because there were so many questions. There were so many, you know, even back then, pre-internet, you know, there was, you know, fan theories running amok, you know, in fanzines and, you know, regular magazines. You know, there was rumors that Patrick Stewart wasn't happy about living in L.A., that he wanted out, so, you know, so he could go back to England. So there was a theory going around that, you know, they're going to kill off Picard, and that Riker was going to be the captain, and that Shelby was going to be his first officer. You know, like, there was so many crazy theories going around. And, yeah, I remember having to wait till September, the end of September, to find out what happened. And it just blew my mind, you know. I will say, you know, as a Star Trek fan, even to this day, that cliffhanger's the best cliffhanger that Star Trek's ever done. Like, it really was, like, holy crap, like, what is going to happen now? Richard, what are your thoughts on the Best of Both Worlds Part 1?
Well, seeing it semi-recently, I want to say it was like a year, maybe a year or a bit ago, I rewatched pretty much every Star Trek series. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. That is one of, definitely actually the best cliffhanger they've ever done, and one of the best TV cliffhangers of all time as well, just in general. Had such a big impact on TV at the time, because Star Trek was, you know, quite popular. You know, I'm sure that was all the rage. Obviously, I don't remember when it happened, but I do remember how it affected me when I saw it. And I was just like, what just happened? Excuse me? Like, this is not like, like that's Captain what? I don't remember hearing any of the, obviously, any of the, you know, rumors or anything like that. And I'm sure that would have driven me nuts, because nowadays, you know, like people crave that sort of thing. Like with every show I watch, if there's some sort of tidbit of information out there about somebody that's getting ready to leave or whatever, right? Like, look at what happened to American Gods not too long ago. You know, that was just like so much gossip and rumors, and, you know, everything exploded, and it was really fun and interesting to follow. So I'm sure I would have loved hearing about that type of stuff. I'm a gossip girl at heart. So that would have been really fun, but definitely one of the top season ending cliffhangers of all time for any show in any genre, for sure.
And if I remember correctly, I believe this is on one of, I think it's TV Guide, did like a list of like the top 100 episodes of television ever. And this was like on there. Like, it was the only Star Trek entry was this episode.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine that.
Kevin, what are your thoughts?
See, I know the episodes, and I know I've watched them, but there is not a chance I watched them in 1990. Which is, I've discussed on previous episodes, my brief attempt to get into the Star Trek world, and then going to a Star Trek club meeting and being completely overwhelmed by it when I was just, you know, watching it casually in syndication. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing, knowing when that happened, when I saw this, I probably saw it like on a Monday and a Tuesday. I didn't have, by the time I would have seen it, it wasn't waiting the whole summer in between. It was like far enough along in syndication, it was probably on every day of the week.
Yep.
So it was just, oh, okay, that was cool, I'll watch the next episode tomorrow. And, you know, because I've heard you talk about it before and other people, I really missed out on something there to not have the buildup in between. You know, for a modern day version, you could watch Infinity War and then Endgame back to back right now. But to have that year in between of what is going to happen next was painful, but also exciting too. So if, you know, I feel like I missed something with the Star Trek to not have that wait in between of like, okay, what's going to happen? What's going on? Pre-internet, it's not, I mean, there were still rumors and speculation from magazines and all, but it's not like you had, you know, direct information like we do now with these things, or spoilers from the set or whatever.
Well, and that's an excellent comparison, Kevin, because, yeah, between Infinity War and Endgame, like going into Endgame, I had no idea what to expect. Like, you know, the Russo brothers and everyone involved in that movie did such a great job keeping the secrets that it wasn't ruined for me. And it was like, I had no idea what to expect going into Endgame. And that's exactly what happened in the fall when Best of Both Worlds Part 2 came out. I had no idea what to expect. Like, you know, was Picard going to die? You know, what was, you know, the enter, you know, like what was going to happen? Like, and yeah, you know, it's nowadays, it's unfortunately we with the internet and with spoilers and, you know, people, you know, everyone's got a camera on their phone and all that kind of stuff. Like, it's so easy to be spoiled now.
Pay attention to none of it.
Yeah.
I think I've got to be the only person that does that.
Oh no, there's a lot of people that do that, but.
No, I meant out of like people that I know.
Yeah.
Did you see the couple that was out hiking and wandered into season 2 of Mandalorian?
No, that would be awesome.
Oh my God.
They were up hiking. They're like, oh, we hear people over there. Let's just walk along. Like, it's not a main trail, but we're curious. Let's just go along. And they come over this ridge and down in like a little closed off valley area, which everything was closed off. They thought they were doing fine. You see a bunch of stormtroopers lined up and the camera people and all. They're like, oh, we know what we just stumbled across.
Did they like cool. record it and release it? That's why they, people know about
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I mean, all you see is like some stormtroopers marching. You can tell it's being filmed. You can see the camera. Mm-hmm. But honestly, it doesn't look any different than stormtroopers marching at a Comic-Con. Like, mm-hmm. it doesn't spoil anything. You can just tell it's yeah. being filmed for something.
Well,
They run it through all their software and make it, you know, Instagrammable or whatever, right? They run those Instagram filters over the screen yeah. and make it look all dark and shiny and, you know, bright. What are they called? What's the stupid star bright thing that Abrams does all the time?
Lens flares?
Yes, lens flares. Throw some freaking lens flares in there.
Well, that's the cool thing about The Mandalorian, though, because, like, I know in the season finale, like, when Moff Gideon had all them stormtroopers there, a lot of them were actually 501st people. Like, yeah. They just called them in because they're like, why spend a bunch of money, you know, on all these stormtrooper costumes when we have people that have replica stormtrooper costumes that would love to be on the show anyway?
Yeah, exactly. And would probably do it for very cheap.
Oh, yeah.
Compared to, you know, other, like, getting whatever, unionized or something.
Yeah,
unionized extras. I don't even know if that's a thing, but.
Yeah, hiring extras, building the costumes. Yeah, they probably exactly. just threw the 501st some money, you know, to go to a charity.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's, yeah. Yeah. Good point.
So that's awesome. Jason, what are your thoughts on the Best of Both Worlds Part 1?
Well, sadly, I too did not have the luxury of catching that. That was I was all about the original series, but then I got heavily into Star Wars, and I was still riding that Return of the Jedi wave, and that's all that really mattered to me at that point. And so Star Trek The Next Generation just got kind of glossed over. It wasn't until, I think, 93, 94, Star Trek wound up becoming a bonding point for me and my stepdad. And so, he managed to get some of the reruns and stuff. He had a lot of it recorded before on VHS. And mm-hmm. so we actually we started over the series and watched it over. Meanwhile, you know, we're kind of getting caught up real time when the later seasons came out. And so, excuse me. So I got to watch that pretty much back to back. So it didn't have, I got to wait. You know, feeling of what's going to happen next. But I do remember watching it, seeing the end of part one, and it was definitely kind of like, oh, damn, you know, Riker's, okay, he's going to kill everyone. All right. And I mean, I thought it was kind of cool because Riker was always my favorite. But it was just that I don't think it had that dramatic feel to it. So when part two came back in, it was like, you know, it went back with the flow, they went through, they dealt with the Borg and so it was just, I think I missed out on that. And I think it's definitely kind of robbed. I think I was definitely robbed of that. But at that time, it was just, that's not what I was into, mm-hmm. so to speak. So sadly, but it did, I definitely could see how, just from other TV shows and just basing it on that experience, having that cliffhanger just being on part one and then having to wait. I know, what was the standard waiting time from back then? That was, what, almost a year?
Well, part one was, I'd say middle of June, and then part two would have been, like, end of September.
Okay, it wasn't horrible, but still, no. You got a few months of just, like, but, yeah, I really wish that was, like, I saw it, but, yeah, I could definitely see how that definitely just, mm-hmm. just put everyone, and especially not having the internet and everything else, and it's just that word of mouth in certain circles, especially if you go, because I remember in the local comic shop, that's if you wanted any form of nerdy news, that's where you had to go. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was just like, other than that, it was just either your gossip magazines or whatever's on TV, but if you really wanted straight up nerd news before, you know, Henry Knowles came out, it was like you had to go to your comic shops to find these.
Yeah. Well, for me, like my mom used to buy like Star Mag, like the Star newspaper, the Inquirer, that sort of stuff. So every once in a blue moon, you'd catch something, they'd have something nerdy in there. But for me, a lot of my sources of geek news back in those days was actually our local newspaper's TV guide. Like every Sunday, they would have a TV guide that came with the newspaper. Like it wasn't TV guide, but it was the newspaper's version. And they would always have where you can write in and ask, you know, the columnist a question. And I just remember people writing in about the cliffhanger, like, you know, why didn't part two air? And then that's how it was explained to me, was through that. But yeah, a couple quick things before we move on. Going back 30 years, when 30 years ago, I lived on an acreage. And we didn't have cable, right? So I watched part one at my aunt's house in the town I live in now. They had cable, so I was able to watch it, right? But out on the acreage, we had an antenna. And to receive the channel that carried Star Trek Next Generation, I literally had to run outside and turn the antenna and point it towards Edmonton. In order to get it. And unfortunately, in the summer months, for whatever reason, the warm weather or whatever interferes with the signal. So it would be really crappy. Like, you really couldn't watch Star Trek during the summer, like Next Generation during the summer, like, because it would, like, come in and out. Like, it would get fuzzy, and you'd get the snow, and then it would come back, and then it might get fuzzy again. And it was really in the winter months where it actually came in, you know, good. For whatever reason, the cold weather is better for analog television signals, I guess, for some reason. But I remember, for, you know, thinking that part two was the next week, I think I convinced my mom to drive me into my aunt's house so I could watch it. And then it was a rerun. And I just remember being just completely devastated by that. But yeah. It was a few years later, I want to say about 3 years later, that my parents invested in the old satellite system where the satellite itself moved and we got, you know, good picture quality and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, back in those days, yeah, it was antenna, and it sucked. It really did. The kids these days don't realize how good they have it. All right. So I had another point, but I can't remember what it was. So we'll move on. We'll talk about one more movie, and then we'll talk a little bit music, and then we'll get on to some more movies. So Back to the Future Part 3. That aired during the summer of 1990 as well. I love the Back to the Future movies. I really liked Part 3. I liked them all. But I don't know. I'm a fan of the Wild West, you know. So part three kind of spoke to me a little bit more. Kevin, what are your thoughts on Back to the Future Part 3?
I enjoy. I like it. My least favorite of the three, though.
Fair.
And I feel if the big reason is because of how good two is, and if you flip them, I may have enjoyed it more. But my big problem is Back to the Future 2 opens up doors to this world of how much time travel we can do, forward, back, this affects this, now we have to go here, now we have to go back here. Mm-hmm. Doc Brown even has to draw, you know, on the chalkboard to explain it to certain members of the audience, this is how time travel's working, we're creating this alternate timeline and all.
Yep.
It's incredible, it's so cool, and then 3, they're like, nope, we're in one place and that's it. There will be none of that in this movie. And it's kind of disappointing. You know, you dump all the toys out, and then you tell the kid, no, never mind. We got to put all these away again. And it's still fun. It's a good movie. It's very enjoyable. It's silly. You can tell how much fun they're having with it and just goofing around and all. But it's just, you did all this incredible work in two which expands your sci-fi audience at the time and brings mm-hmm. more people in, gets people into it. And then three, you're like, never mind, this is a Western. With like 5 minutes of other stuff. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of upsets me. Three's more of an episode of the animated Back to the Future series than it is, you know, a full movie mm-hmm. that should have followed number two. So I like it. I'm sure I didn't see it in theater when it came out. I'm sure it was, you know, later on, you know, VHS or something like that. But it's just, I hold two so high, and one, of course, is great. The three just disappoints me overall.
Hmm. Well, like before we cut out, I had mentioned that this is actually my favorite one. which, you know,
I'm not saying it's a bad movie, for what I was going for. You know?
Oh, no, I totally get it. But for me, I should point out, it's got a special place in my heart for a couple of reasons. One, you know, I like Westerns. My grandpa was, you know, he loved Westerns. So there's, like, some nostalgia there. Two, this was actually, I think, the first paperback novel I ever actually read from top to bottom. Because I remember buying this they still have them not for you guys down in the States, but in Canada, Scholastic has book fairs that go to the schools. Do they have that down there?
They still have them.
Okay, so anyway, you know, every October the book fair would come to our school. And I remember buying this paperback novel for Back to the Future Part 3. I can't remember if it was before. I think it might have been. Oh, maybe it was late, earlier in the year. Maybe the book fair came a couple. I can't remember. But anyway, I remember buying it and reading it, and so there's that aspect of it. And I should point out that the paperback's actually a little bit darker than the movie. Like it, you know, in the book, Strickland's, you know, like that actor who played Principal Strickland in the first two movies, and he plays like the marshal or whatever, he actually gets killed in the book. Like, he gets shot by Buford before the climax of the story. So I just remember that being like, whoa, that's pretty dark. Also, I remember renting this movie, like staying at my granny's here in Barrhead. I remember renting it at the local Red Rooster, like back in the day when, you know, convenience stores had movie rentals. I remember renting it there, and I remember, you know, watching it in her basement because she had an extra TV and a VCR down there. And I just remember my sister and I watching it and just being enthralled by it. Like, it just has a special place in my heart, this movie. Jason, what are your thoughts?
I love them all. I really do. Number two being my absolute favorite. But I remember I always had a big thing for Westerns, and number three was always, I just really enjoyed. I loved them all. Really. I can't say anything bad about the Back to the Future trilogy or the third one. I know the third one seemed a little bit more relaxed than the other two, but it was definitely kind of, I don't know. I love them both. I really can't argue anything against it. You know, although I would say it's a little off topic, but you know, have you ever seen A Million Ways to Die in the West?
Mm-hmm.
Just that random cameo with Doc Brown where he walks. I was like, yeah. that was perfect. Like, yep. It was just like, okay, that just kind of tied everything together, like just inadvertently tied everything together. I'm like, that's just awesome. But I don't know. The third one, I enjoyed it for what it was. And I really enjoyed the outfit that Doc had picked out for him, going back, like the pink, blue, frilly, like, oh, it was horrible. But
yep. Yeah, and then, yeah, when he's driving to that wall where there's all the painted Indians, and then he ends up in 1885, and then there's all real Indians there. Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I do love the time travel, you know, paradoxes, like the fact that Doc buried the time machine, And that, you know, and then the 1950s doc, it helps Marty dig it out. I thought that was so cool. I always wondered, like, why wouldn't the doc leave a note saying, hey, you know, make sure you load up on some jerry cans of gas just in case you decide to come back in time. Because there's no gas stations back here. You know, I know he wasn't expecting Marty to come and save him, but he had to know that Marty would do it. Like, he just had to know. But anyway, you know, I digress. I don't want to nitpick. Richard, what are your thoughts, sir?
I think for me as a child, it was probably my favorite. It's kind of the silliest of the bunch, much like the cartoon sort of thing. Like, it's very, it's closer to the cartoon than it is the other two, as, was it Jason that said that or Kevin? Somebody said that before. It's very true. And, but at the time when I saw them for the first time, probably around this ish time, my dad was, pretty lax with the movies he would let me watch for sure. So, I got to watch movies pretty young for the most part. And I just remember loving this because of the fact that it was a Western. Five O Goes West was one of my favorite movies at the time.
Oh, yeah.
When I was pretty young as well. So, you know, there's another Western. Throw it in there. So, you know, that kind of feeds into that. As well as I was a huge original series Star Trek fan when I was a very young kid. That's what I grew up with my dad. And that's kind of a space Western. So it has a lot of the same kind of feel to it. So I think that all kind of contributed to my love of this movie. Now as an adult, I still appreciate it for being, you know, a part of the trilogy, and it's fun, but I wish that, you know, like in hindsight, maybe they could have taken it a little more seriously or come up with a better script or something. You know, like, I'm sure they could have done more with the concept of a third film than what we got. But that being said, you know, like, there's nothing necessarily bad about it. It's not as great as the other two. And in my opinion, it should be better. Like, it had everything going for it to be able to allow it to be amazing, and it just kind of didn't step up to the plate. You know, it didn't grab that brass ring, you know, pal. Hey, pal, grab that brass ring.
Well, it could have been that because they filmed 2 and 3 back to back. Maybe, you know, if they had taken a couple years between, maybe they would have went a little bit bigger scale. But, you know, it is what it is. All right, so before we start talking about the rest of the movies on the list, I'm going to go through some songs that aren't necessarily from the summer, but they might be. So, Nothing Compares to You by Sinead O'Connor. That came out.
Sinead O'Rebellion. Ooh.
Yeah. Enjoy the
Is
silence.
Is this when she shaved her head?
Yes, that would have been, yep. Enjoy the Silence by Depeche Mode. You Can't Touch This, Hammer.
Oh, God. You remember that cartoon he had?
Hammer Man? With the magic shoes?
Yeah.
One of the worst drawn Saturday morning cartoons ever?
Oh, God.
Hold On by Wilson Phillips. Groove Is in the Heart by D-Light.
Oh, that's a good one.
This one I'm going to mention, I remember the video for it because of the animation, and it's Opposites Attract by Paula Abdul. I just remember, like, there was, like, a cartoon cat, almost like the Cheetos cat, that she's...
MC Scat Cat.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, I just remember that being thinking it was cool. Thunderstruck by AC/DC. Vogue by Madonna. Let's see, what else do we got here? Suicide Blonde by INXS. Unskinny Bop by Poison.
No New Kids on the Block? What the heck?
Tonight. Tonight by New Kids on the Block.
Oh, finally. I mean, I don't know that one, but, I mean, at least they're there.
Friends in Low Places by Garth Brooks.
Really? Wow.
Was that obviously before his emo stage, right?
Pre-Christine's, yeah.
Okay.
Let's see here. Yeah, that's about it as far as the ones that look interesting to me. But yeah, that's some of the music that came out in 1990. All right, so let's talk some more movies. Total Recall from Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Ronnie Cox is the bad guy, and what's that guy's name? It's Captain Hudson on Sequest 2032. I can't remember that actor's name, but he's awesome. He's in it. The Sequest fans will know what I'm talking about. Total Recall. It was a classic sci-fi movie. Jason, what are your thoughts on Total Recall?
I loved it. It's one of my favorites. I can't remember how old I was exactly when I saw it, but I remember during the scene where they're in the bar and stuff, and then that woman comes around and she's got the three tits, and I was seeing that, and I looked over at my dad, and my dad smiles. He's like, "I know, it's okay." I'm like, "What? What? Explain this to me." Like, I mean, I'm not dogging it, but I'm just kind of like, what? Like, yeah, that's like the one that really sticks out. I mean, aside from the oxygen being sucked from their bodies and their eyes like bulging out. Yeah. But it's like, that whole movie was really cool. I think the part that still makes me cringe is when he shoves that rod up his nose to pull out the tracker.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear that crunch noise, and these just say, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yuck.
You know, like, I see people, you know, getting those COVID tests up the nose, and that makes me think of that. That totally makes me think of that. Michael Ironside, that is the actor I was thinking of. So, yeah, like, Sharon Stone was in this movie, Michael Ironside, Ronnie Cox, who else here? Oh, Dean Norris. For those who don't know, he's Hank Schrader on Breaking Bad. He's Walt's brother-in-law. He's the one-eyed guy.
That guy's such a douchebag.
The one-eyed guy there. I really enjoyed Total Recall. Rich, your thoughts on the original Total Recall?
I don't think I saw this until much later. But I mean, this is the one with the three boobs, right? Like, is there anything else to say? I mean, especially as a child, like I'd barely seen two boobs, let alone three, you know what I mean? So,
well, there was three boobs. Yeah. There was Mars. There was Johnny Cabs. There's, you know, Sharon Stone kicking ass.
It's funny though, because as the fact that you know, seeing the three boobs as a child was amazing. I don't think I counted it, and I'm pretty sure I would have seen this before the other movie, but I don't think I counted it as my first pair of on-screen boobs that I saw. That actually happened when I watched Frankenstein General Hospital on Laserdisc.
Wait, what?
Frankenstein General Hospital.
Yeah.
Is that a spinoff of General Hospital, or?
I'm just gonna leave it there. You guys can go and find it. It is
Is it on Pornhub, Rich?
No. But it is Lord. Yeah, I saw it on Laserdisc, and that was the first time I remember seeing boobs, but it probably might have been, I guess, actually Total Recall, to bring it back to Total Recall. but I mean, looking at that movie now as an adult, what it did at the time was pretty fun and amazing. You know, it managed to be one of the top movies of the entire year. and it kind of kept his flame going even longer, right? Mm-hmm. So, because that was Total Recall, 1990. So when was Terminator that he was in? Was that 87?
Well, the original Terminator was 84, and I believe T2 was 91.
Oh, okay. So this was just before okay. So this would have, I guess, been right before his flame or whatever. Anyway.
Or maybe T2 was 92. It's either 92 or 91. I can't remember.
Mm-hmm. I still don't think that it's necessarily his best work, but it's definitely his most fun, as far as I'm concerned, at least without going into, you know, complete camp, like, you know, Eraser territory or something like that.
Mm-hmm. What, Last Action Hero wasn't good? Come on.
Okay, fair. There, yeah. Okay. Sorry.
Kevin, your thoughts, sir?
So, funny you mentioned watching it with Dad and looking over, because I know I would not have seen this movie if not for my dad wanting to see it. And I don't know if it was like HBO later that year, or he rented the VHS or what. Like, I know we were home when he saw it, and he probably just wanted to see it and, you know, wanted to hang out and do something together. And it's a really good movie too. Like, action from start to finish. Yes, there's the boobs. Yes, there's, you know, gross stuff. And what's the stomach?
The
leader of the rebellions or something.
And then you get to then, you're like, well, wait, I'm not sure who was who and what was real and what wasn't anymore either here. So you want to watch it again too. Which might be one of, like, the first movies at that age for me where I'm like, not I want to watch again because, oh my God, I love this movie. I want to watch it again. Like, you know, Batman or Star Wars or something. But I want to watch it again because I am not entirely sure what just happened here.
So, like, the original Inception.
Yep.
But, I mean, it's such a fun movie. I don't know. You know, yeah, there's a few Arnold ones I'd put higher. But Total Recall's, like, really good. And I think shows, you know, a lot of what Arnold could be and was at that time, too. Sharon Stone, I think that's, like, my favorite Sharon Stone movie.
Mm-hmm.
She's just so cool and badass in it.
Yep, agreed. All right, well, I'm thinking of doing two lightning rounds. So we'll start off with... because this summer had a lot of sequels, and for whatever reason had a lot of number two sequels. So the second movie of a number of franchises. So I'm just going to lightning round this, and you guys, you know, can talk about them all, talk about one, whatever you want. So we had Die Hard 2, we had RoboCop 2, we had Gremlins 2, and we had Young Guns 2.
Predator 2.
Was that also this summer?
I think it was in the year of 2000. No, not 2000.
November 21st.
Oh, okay. So that's why I didn't include it, because it was technically not the summer months.
Same with Child's Play 2.
Child's... Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, so Die Hard 2, RoboCop 2, Gremlins 2, Young Guns 2. Die Hard 2, not a big fan, definitely not as good as the original. RoboCop 2, I actually really liked RoboCop 2. You know, it was definitely a lot darker. Irvin Kershner, the director of The Empire Strikes Back, directed this one. I loved the special effects in this movie, you know. You know, I thought it was a fitting sequel to the original RoboCop movie. The original RoboCop movie, in my opinion, is still better, but RoboCop 2 is pretty close. You know, and I really like the villains in it. You know, a lot of people gave it a lot of flack for being too dark and too graphic, but I that's just the future that RoboCop exists in. You know, like, you're dealing with drug dealers, like, they're gonna be bad. Gremlins 2. Not a big fan of, didn't really care for it. I remember my sister loved it. Young Guns 2, again, I think this is a case where the sequel was actually better than the original film. I really liked Young Guns 2. I liked, you know, all the actors involved. I love the soundtrack, you know, the Bon Jovi soundtrack. Yeah, it was a great film. Let's see, who's next up on the list? Richard, what are your thoughts on this list of number twos?
RoboCop 2 is definitely up there on one of my favorite 90s action films, I would have to say, nice. For sure. What were some of the others here?
Die Hard 2?
Die Hard 2. Which one was that again? That wasn't so...
That
the
was
third
die-
one was the one with Samuel L. Jackson?
Yeah, that was the third one.
Okay.
This is the one where they're at the airport.
So that's the one where he rides the wing and then they do the frozen Sea-Doo thingies in the back cabin thing and save the world or whatever?
I think so.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was, yeah, I would agree with you. It's definitely not as good as the first one or the third one, because the third one for me is one of my favorites. Of course, not as good as the latest one. That's definitely the best, but I'd say the third one and the first definitely were way better than that second one.
Yeah, agreed.
Although it's still not terrible, but over the whole Arching series, I would say number two is... you know, definitely a little down there for me anyway. Gremlins 2, again, I was younger when I saw that movie, so I loved it. Now, obviously the first one is, I realized the first one is a little bit better, but at the time, the first one scared the crap out of me. Mm-hmm. And I remember watching the first one, and then I think maybe I watched the second one first. And then I'd watched the first one, and then I didn't watch them again for years because the first one freaked me out so much. I thought it was like a horror movie up until, I don't know, maybe like 10, 15 years ago when I decided to try and rewatch it with a friend at a time or something. And I was like, wait a second, Gremlins isn't a horror? I totally remember it scaring me. Wasn't it a horror movie? So, yeah, but I love that movie. I still think it's hilarious. And fun, so definitely could be worse. Young Guns 2, I don't actually remember much about it, so I can't really comment on that.
All right, no problem. Kevin, your thoughts, sir?
Right, I think I'll agree Young Guns 2 is better than 1, and actually I'm pretty sure all of us, like my friendship and family group at the time, pretty sure we all saw 2 before 1. And then we're like, oh, we like 2 so much. Let's find 1 and get the whole story here. RoboCop 2, while yes, is very dark and violent. If you saw the unedited, untouched version of the first RoboCop movie, you were prepared for 2. Mm-hmm. But if you saw like a cable edit at that point, you were not. And then 3 is just a cartoon. Mm-hmm. Die Hard 2 it's there, you know, like as a completist, sure, but if you miss it, you're not really missing anything. Gremlins 2 is the one I was leading up to, because you don't know what spot, like Rich was saying, to put Gremlins in, and especially 2. Is it horror? Is it comedy? Is it fantasy? Is it this? Is it that? Like, it doesn't fit in a box.
And especially as a child.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I remember being one as a kid. I'm like, I don't know what this is. And everything beforehand, you know, like we can put things in little boxes and label them and it's all set. This doesn't fit. And it starts, you know, open up my mind for things as much as Dick Tracy didn't, to be like, okay, so we can be multiple things at once here. It can be a horror and a comedy. It can be a this and a that. We don't have to be confined into the limits of one thing here. And then that opens your mind up to like, okay, well, can we do this and this? Can we take these two things together and explore? And then, you know, you start creating your own stuff and, you know, looking into other things as you get a little older and all. But you need your mind open up that this is possible. You don't have to stay within these guidelines.
Mm-hmm. All right. Jason, your thoughts, sir?
Okay, let's see. RoboCop 2. Loved it. It was one of my favorites. RoboCop has always been one of my favorites growing up. Yeah, like you said, if you saw the R-rated or the director's cut of the first one, you know how bloody it was, you know how graphic it was, like his demise and everything and transforming into RoboCop. So it's like, in that sense, it's almost like the second one is pretty tame compared to the first one. Although it's, I do think the second one is definitely my favorite growing up, because it was just like the robots that were all in there and that whole process of them trying to recreate RoboCop when you have that one skeleton come out, lift up its helmet and scream and fall apart.
I've been thinking that this entire time.
Yeah, and then the other one that shoots the other two scientists, and then he goes off and shoots himself in the head. You're just kind of like, it's always been one of my favorites. The second Die Hard, I for what it is, I love it. It's part of my Christmas film package. Like when December rolls around, I have a series of movies that, you know, that's all holiday themed, and Die Hard 1 and 2 are in there because they evolve around Christmas, and Die Hard is a Christmas movie. I don't care what anyone says.
Agreed.
But yeah, you know, but it's definitely not the best one, but it's entertaining. I enjoyed it for what it was. Young Guns 2, I remember watching it. I did like it. I remember it was just kind of, it was definitely sad. Like, I remember it being really, I haven't seen it in so long. I know I own it, but I just haven't watched it, but I remember when I did watch it. I remember it being, it was really good, but it was definitely kind of sad. And I love how they ended it. And it definitely kind of wanted you, like, you wanted more, but at the same time, they just kind of wrapped everything up. And I enjoyed the first one. But yeah, I definitely do think number two was a lot better than the first one.
All right. Okay, we will go with the second lightning round. There's just two movies on this one. We got Darkman, and we have Problem Child. Now, Darkman. Honestly, I haven't watched Darkman in probably 30 years. I think I've only ever watched it once. I remember.
Yeah, same here.
I remember enjoying it, you know, and I remember it, you know, Liam Neeson starring in it. You know, just looking at it, it's directed by Sam Raimi, so this is pre, you know, Spider-Man. And yeah, I just remember liking it. And, you know, I never watched the sequels because they did do two direct-to-video sequels. I never did watch those because I remember hearing that Liam Neeson wasn't, they, you know, basically recast Darkman, so I never did watch it, but I remember liking the original one. And Problem Child, I probably haven't watched in almost 30 years. I remember watching that in the movie theater with my cousin, and yeah, I just remember laughing a lot. Like, I remember what's his name, John Ritter, of course, and what's the guy with the voice,
Gilbert
Godfrey. Gilbert, yeah, Gilbert Gottfried, yeah. And I just remember him being in it, and yeah, just having a good time. Kevin, your thoughts on these two movies?
Problem Child, I'm sure I saw at some point, but it's just, even at that age, it was just a genre that did nothing for me. I'd rather watch other movies, so I just didn't care. Darkman, I remember it was like a big, you know, all the kids in the neighborhood sleepover thing for someone's birthday. So there was like probably eight of us, and we stayed up and we watched Darkman and we watched Predator and, you know, eating pizza and soda and all. And that movie was just cool and a little more horror than we expected, especially when, you know, he's bandaged up and all and falling apart. Mm-hmm. But also kind of action and kind of superhero too and all, and just like a movie that the whole room got quiet. It's like, what are we watching? Because this is different and very cool and exciting, and I can't, you know, look away for 5 minutes to screw around and do something else and then come back to it. And again, kind of like many franchises at the time, it gets so watered down later. But that first one, I guess cult classic now, underrated movie, you know, whatever you want to call it, but you know, you talk about earlier, if you read Ninja Turtles, the first one now, I think you could revive Darkman now and do something really cool with it.
Yeah, definitely. Jason, your thoughts, sir?
Problem Child, I remember as a kid I really enjoyed it, but I haven't watched it in, oh God, yeah, I'm going to say, I hate to say the number, but like a little over 30 years now. Like, I think I was probably about 10 or so when I watched it last, but I remember I did enjoy it. And it's like, but I keep having flashbacks between like Beethoven and Problem Child, like for whatever reason, like my memories are all like mushed together. Yeah. And I'm like, no, that's not the right movie. This is, you know, but Darkman, I remember, it's like, I remember watching, and it was mostly, it was funny because I remember watching it. I only saw it once and I was like, okay, that's cool, whatever. And I didn't think much of it. And it wasn't until way later, when Netflix first came out and they still mailed you DVDs. And I remember I went through and I was looking up Bruce Campbell movies, and Darkman, Bruce Campbell, came up. I'm like, oh, I don't remember him being in that. So I'm like, all right. So I'm watching it. I watched it all again. And I was just like, oh, wow, this is actually really good. And it was definitely that Sam Raimi style, that very jarring action, that the effects of it, like his skin boiling off when it starts to deteriorate. And it was just like, but at the end of it all, spoilers, when he gets away, he turns into Bruce Campbell, and Bruce Campbell's only in it for like less than a minute. You only see his face as he disappears into the crowd. And you're just kind of like, that, okay. Like, I remember we're sitting through the whole movie going, like, where's Bruce Campbell? Where's, you know, but no, that was it. Like,
That's funny. I totally don't remember that at all. Huh.
Yeah, it's at the very end where he goes to get away, and the girl, I forgot, the love interest or whatever it is, she goes to look for him, but he's leaving her, and he puts on this Bruce Campbell, you know, he acts like he's putting on a mask, but it's Bruce Campbell, and he's walking away, just disappears into the crowd. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, and I don't know Problem Child, like I said, it's been like 30 years since I watched it. Like, I think I watched it once this year. I think I watched it, we rented it once afterwards. I don't think I would like it now. Like, I don't think it holds up. But
I have a feeling you're right. It probably doesn't. I think I might like it, but I agree. It probably doesn't hold up. There's no way. It's so funny, especially right, you know, like in the past few years with how people have been taking to older media and kind of boycotting it and whatnot, right? Like, I can pretty much guarantee it wouldn't do that well.
So, Rich, what are your thoughts on... Well, we got your thoughts on Problem Child. Your thoughts on Darkman.
I've actually never seen it. All right. So I have no idea. I have heard of it in passing a few times here and there, but I have never seen it. So, I just have to stick by the fact that I really enjoyed Problem Child as a child. I wanted to be the Problem Child. I probably was the Problem Child.
Well, to add to Jason's point, it totally makes sense that Bruce Campbell would be in it if Sam Raimi directed it, right? Because he's in everything Sam Raimi does, pretty much.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, that was our podcast Time Machine, discussing the summer of 1990.
Can I actually, real quick, get out a couple of ones here that I found? What was your criteria for summer again?
May to September.
Okay, yeah, so I got a couple here that still kind of fit that. The Jetsons movie and DuckTales movie came out in theaters in July and August of 1990.
Oh, I missed those.
Yeah, I remember Jetsons. I don't think I ever saw DuckTales.
Yeah, it was DuckTales and the Treasure of the Lost Lamp came out August 3rd. And was the 70th top grossing movie of the year. Jetsons was the 66th most grossing movie of the year. It came out July 6th. Those movies both, for me as a child, were absolutely amazing. I loved them, watched them over and over and over again. Same with another one here, which, you know, looking back on it when I was young and thinking about this movie, Watching it as a child, I'd kind of like, if I showed this to a kid my age when I saw it, it'd be like, really? You understand that? But The Gods Must Be Crazy Part 2. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of this film, but it is really fun. Yes, exactly.
See, I've seen the first one. I don't think I've ever seen the second one.
Oh, the second one is the better one as far as I'm concerned. Mind you, it's been years since I've seen them. But that's definitely another one. The Witches, the Jim Henson movie, which I watched with my wife not too long ago. And it is really weird nowadays. It's still kind of creepy and freaky. Like some of the practical effects and the costume designing and stuff like that still works out really well. But just some of the moments don't really hold up as well, but that movie was intense as a child.
The first time I saw that was our English teacher didn't want to do anything for today, so he willed it in and popped that movie in, and we watched Witches. That's the first time I ever saw it, and I'm sitting in the middle of class going, what the hell are we watching?
That's hilarious.
Yeah,
I have, and this one I think just falls right just outside of the of your summer criteria, but I have to mention it because as a child, this man was, you know, a very good portion of my television watching time. Ernest Goes to Jail came out in 1990, April 6th, 1990 to be exact. So
it's pretty close.
It's pretty close. It's, you know, kind of the end of spring or whatever, right? But I felt like I had to bring it up because that is, you know, like Ernest. Mm-hmm. It's Ernest. You got to bring up Ernest.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Ernest can't go wrong.
Ernest is fantastic. All right. Jason, Kevin, did you guys have anything else you wanted to throw in there before we move on?
No.
All right.
No. DuckTales, great movie, though.
You know, I don't think I ever saw that one. I know I've seen the Jetsons for sure, but I don't know if I've seen that DuckTales movie. I can't remember.
Well, now you've got research. You got to watch Frankenstein General Hospital and the DuckTales movie.
Well, I'm sure the DuckTales movie's got to be on Disney Plus, right? Because, like, I know the DuckTales show is.
It'll probably be a heck of a lot harder to find than Frankenstein General Hospital. That's for sure.
All right. Well, this was Podcast Time Machine, summer of 1990. So we're going to move on to our next segment, which is Brain Candy. So this segment is where we, the people on the podcast here, discuss something that we have watched, have read, have listened to, something we fed our brain. So I'll kick it off. I've got a few quick things here. Since my last recording, I finished the new season of Rick and Morty. Fantastic. Love that show. Favorite animated show currently on TV. And then I actually subscribed to Apple TV, and I wasn't going to do this, but I did it because I found out that Ron Moore and Naren Shankar, two vets from Star Trek Next Generation writing staff, were working on the show called For All Mankind, where it's an alternative history of basically NASA. Like, what would have happened to NASA, what would have happened to the United States, what would have happened to the world had the Soviets got to the moon first. So in this retelling of history, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin, they did make it to the moon, but the Russians made it there first. And then, so it inspires NASA to, you know, try harder, and the United States government to dig deeper because they wanted to, you know, they didn't want the commies, you know, taking the moon and, you know, taking nukes up there and all that kind of stuff. So this is like a 60s alternate version of what would have happened. And it's awesome. It's really cool. It's well written, well acted. I can't say enough good things about it. And then I watched a murder mystery called Defending Jacob, which is, like I said, a murder mystery, but it stars Chris Evans, Captain America. So, of course, I had to watch it because it's Chris Evans. And it was great. My wife and I you know, it's 8 episodes, and I think For All Mankind, I believe, is 10 episodes. But yeah, at the end of Defending Jacob, you really question what just transpired and who's innocent and who's not. It's really a good show. So they're both on Apple TV. So I you know, shilled out the $5.99 a month to get that. And I'm not sure what I'm going to watch next. I know they got the new version of Amazing Stories on there, so I might check that out.
Did you watch the news one there with, what was it, Good Morning or something? Or?
Yeah, no, I haven't. I might get to it. I don't know. I'm not the, you know.
Wow.
I've heard good things, but, you know, it's one of those I got.
It's not up your alley.
Yeah. Right now, my wife, I'm going off a tangent. My wife and I are rewatching, well, she's watching for the first time. I'm rewatching The Umbrella Academy on Netflix because
good, nice. Yeah,
I watched it last year when it came out, but it came out like February of 2019, so it's been like a year and a half. And
really?
I
feel like it's older than that. Really, that's all?
Yeah, no, it came out earlier last year, and I kind of forgot what happened, and then I seen that season 2's coming, so I was like, mm-hmm. Shit, I better rewatch this. And Crystal hadn't watched it the first time because I watched it when I was away at work. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're rewatching it, and yeah, it's great.
My wife and I actually had the opposite, where she watched it without me and then was telling me how good it was, and I finally gave in and she rewatched it and I watched it for the first time. That's kind of funny.
Nice. Rich, what do you got for the brain candy segment?
Having just moved into the house, I've just been mostly watching television. I haven't watched a lot of movies recently, just keeping it nice and simple to stuff I can kind of watch or listen to while I'm doing other things. Mm-hmm. So right on your Rick and Morty tangent, if I might say, if no one has seen Solar Opposites, really, really good.
We just finished that not that long ago.
Yeah, I personally thought it was really good. Obviously, it's quite derivative of Rick and Morty. You know what I mean? Like, it's got a lot of the same feel to it, obviously. Same people involved in it.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Animation's very similar. But
where are you watching it, Rich? Like, where can you watch it in Canada?
It's on Hulu.
Yeah, it's on Hulu. I mean, I got it from a site that will remain unknown.
We'll talk after the show. Yeah, unfortunately, us knuckleheads don't get Hulu up here.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, no. We don't get the nice things.
Don't get anything good up here. But I was able to get a hold of it. I saw it. It is quite good. I won't say much because I don't want to spoil it for Chris, but my favorite part of the show was the wall part of it. It was the wall. That was, and I personally hope that I've seen some rumors online that they think they might do a spinoff that is that. And I think that that would actually probably be more successful than the actual show. And I think that the roles that those two things are in the show, being A and B stories, I think that should be switched. But that's just me. Go out there, watch it. Great. I also finished Deception recently, which is a one and done 2018 television series. It's kind of along the lines of, you know, pick a job, help a law enforcement kind of television show, you know, where they're like, oh, look, it's an author who needs to help the FBI. Bones. Oh, look, it's a, you know, like an old man who decides to rejoin the force and help the cops, The Rookie. It's, you know, Scorpion, a bunch of geniuses come and, you know, help the FBI. You know, like it's along those same lines, except it's a magician who comes in and helps the FBI. And that to me was kind of a bit of a twist. I thought that was very interesting. And it is. It's kind of fun. It's sad that it was only one season. The end of the show was very close to being, I guess like the last two episodes are a bit of a cliffhanger or whatever, but if they had have left that, maybe they found out they were getting canceled and they did an extra episode or switched it around. But I feel like that would have been the season ending for the cliffhanger is what happens late in the season. And if that had happened, that would have blown people's freaking minds. Because that would have been a great cliffhanger. I will say no more. And as I mentioned a minute ago, Scorpion, I've been rewatching Scorpion because I remember watching about maybe half of the first season a few years ago. And before I moved recently, I had fiber optic internet at my last place where I was in downtown Ottawa. So I got really, really fast speeds for dirt cheap. And no notices of any kind of, you know, in downloading infringement. So I downloaded about 3 terabytes of movies and television shows, mostly television shows, before I moved and canceled my internet, just to be sure. I call it Reshflix. and so I've been rewatching Scorpion and quite enjoying it. I'm almost done season 2 now.
Excellent. Jason. What do you have for brain candy?
Two things. One, I started with the overabundance of downtime that I've had in the last few months. I started rereading a lot of the Middle Earth novels. Like, you know, obviously you have your main trilogy of Lord of the Rings, and then you have your Hobbit, the Silmarillion. But there's also the other trilogy that Christopher Tolkien had released, which kind of goes back to the first age of the Middle Earth, and it kind of talks about the, excuse me, the great battles
that happened. Silmarillion?
No, this is it. They talk about the events and stuff that happened during the Silmarillion, but this is like the what they call the War of the Jewels, but the Silmaril.
Oh, interesting.
And so yeah, it actually kind of goes in and it touches base on the War of the Wraiths, which is like they go into the dragons and everything, and how was it Morgoth was the Dark Lord at the time, or Sauron was the kind of the second command, kind of the peon almost, you know. He wasn't a massive presence like he was later on, but it's been kind of cool. I actually started doing a kind of like what I did with the Star Trek novels on my blog. Just kind of started doing like a Middle Earth challenge, and I just started going through all the history and everything of the Middle Earth, and I soon realized I bit off more than I can chew. So there is so much. I was just kind of like, holy crap. The more I read, the more I'm like, okay, that explains so much from why this happens in novels. It's just Tolkien had, I didn't realize in how much Tolkien had done that he just never finished or put together. And his son, Christopher Tolkien, spent his entire life piecing them all together, making the history books. And he finished that other trilogy that had come out that serves kind of like a prequel almost. And it's just, it's insane on how much information's there. And it's like, he's made this whole language and everything else. And it's just like, wow.
Have you seen the Tolkien film? Speaking of Tolkien,
the one about him? No, I have not seen that one yet. That is
maybe
it
a good way to end your series,
right? So yeah, I've been doing that, and then as far as TV goes, I just finished this last season for the Last Kingdom. I don't know if you guys. It's a series of novels. It's 12 novels total. It was originally on BBC. Mm-hmm. For one season, and then they canceled it, but then Netflix made a deal. They picked it up, and they're on their fourth season right now. They just released it this year, and they're probably going to renew it again for a fifth season. But it's really good. It's dealing kind of – it's along the parallel – the show Vikings.
Mm-hmm. I was about to say, just from the pictures that just popped up, I was like, I'm thinking it came out right around the time Vikings did.
Yeah. It's the parallel. Some of it kind of runs together, but then this also kind of goes beyond the Viking timeline. You still get references to some of the characters that are actually in the Viking TV show, but it's more referring to their sons and everything else. So it's kind of going beyond that generation. So it's kind of it's very cool. It's a historical fiction. So the author took a lot of the history and everything else and just kind of infused the story into it with real characters. And it's, I really enjoy it.
Historical fiction is great.
Right. And so it's just kind of, I it's definitely extremely guilty pleasure. And I spend, you know, when I do laundry and stuff, I'm sitting there watching that. That's usually what I do. So.
Yeah, I've heard good things about it. I know my sister, my brother-in-law watch it, and they've been hounding me to watch it. So it's on my to watch list.
On the back burner, as it were.
Yeah, exactly.
I will say this: it is very much don't get attached to some of the characters.
It's
kind of has that Game of Thrones. Yeah, like it's that Game of Thrones Martin style. He's like, oh, I love this guy, and then it's just like, oh,
nope,
he's dead now. So I found that. You know, the first season definitely kind of like builds you up, get familiar with everyone, you know all their backstories. Second season, some people start disappearing. Third season, that's when it really happens. And this last season was a heart wrench through. I was just like, okay, stop, please. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. But it's good. It's very good.
Excellent. Kevin, what do you have for brain candy for this episode?
I mean, I have things. Unfortunately, they're not as intelligent as the three of you have picked. So, one night a few weeks back, my wife discovered I have never watched Biodome.
Oh.
Yes. So she bought it that day. And that is what we did that night.
Making a filter.
Bought it. Man, it must suck to live in the States where with all the downloading costs.
Well, she was at work, and her work happened to have one of those like cheap DVD bins impulse buying at cash register, and Biodome coincidentally was in it. She was like, oh, screw it, I'll just buy it right now. Oh, yeah. Like $4, you know, whatever it was. But that's a movie. That was interesting to see.
It's a Pauly Shore classic.
Yeah. Sure. Two of those three words you're correct on. what I did not realize as a Kevin Smith fan.
That was great. It just gets better the more you think about it.
I didn't realize Joey Lauren Adams is in it. Who was Mallrats and Chasing Amy.
Yep.
Star Chasing Amy.
Yeah.
So she's in it as Pauly Shore's girlfriend, which I didn't realize. I was like, holy crap. And she's actually a good actress. She's probably the best actress in it.
Yeah, she's been in a few movies. Like, she was in Dazed and Confused. And, what's that Adam Sandler one? Daddy?
Big Daddy? Yeah.
Who's your daddy?
Yeah, I remember her being in that one as well.
There's a failed Married with Children spinoff that she was on as well.
What's that?
Oh, God, I can't remember the name of it right now.
Oh, man, because I watched a behind the, what do they call it, E! True Hollywood Story on Married with Children, and I totally remember what you're talking about now, and it's on the tip of my tongue. Oh, man.
And Matt LeBlanc is on it, too.
Yes!
Top of the Heap.
Is that what it's called?
Yep. Hmm.
Okay.
Sorry, I had to remove Frankenstein General Hospital from my search to look for that.
Oh.
Like most children of the 80s, when I saw a DVD pre-order come up for sale, my wife surprised me with it, and it finally arrived last week or 2 weeks ago, and that is my Blu-ray copy of Rad.
Oh, classic 1980s
BMX bike racing movie. Yes. First time ever.
Oh, my God. I love that movie. It's so
It is what it is.
Yeah, it really is. It's just
I'm not going to enjoy it the same way I enjoyed when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But all the nostalgia came back. I was so excited for it. All of the music is still there. It doesn't flow like I remember it, you know, because it's been so long since I've watched it. I'm like, huh, I thought this scene took place after this scene. You know, nothing that matters, but just it's funny how the details get lost over the years. And then I'm still not sure how I feel about this one, but Fox has a new game show, we'll call it, called Ultimate Tag.
Oh, yeah. I watched the first episode with my wife.
Yeah. It's like tag parkour with American Gladiators.
Yes, that's literally how I, because she was like, what even is this? And I was like, well, it's kind of like tag, but like American Gladiators. And she was like, oh, that's really cool. What's American Gladiators? And I was like, crap.
But there's two things that get me, because it is cool. Here's a maze. Here's an obstacle course. Here's this thing dangling from the ceiling that they have to, you know, climb through and all. Here's our big end run. Like, there's a lot of cool stuff. But two things, when they, because I'm at, like, three episodes I've watched so far, if they have to cut anything from for time, it's always around for the women.
Oof.
I was like, well, that's kind of odd. Like, alternate it if you got to cut for time. I understand. If you have a round where no one scored a point, why would you air that? You know, like, I can get it. But also, three episodes in, they're still debuting their professional taggers. I was like, we have multiple games per episode. We're three episodes in, and you still have people I haven't seen on TV yet? You hired way too many people.
Yeah. Like how many professional taggers are there in the world?
Right? I mean, like,
is there a league?
So what do you do for a professional tagger?
Yeah, like, how do I watch that? Oh, it's on ESPN, the Ocho.
And they all have these ridiculous gimmicks too. I'm the geek, I'm the kid, I'm the boss. I was like, geez,
yes.
Like, you're just,
yeah,
you're picking names out of a dictionary, you're not even trying here.
Like, they're almost trying to have gimmicks, right?
Oh, it's kind of like the MXC style where they all have a gimmick of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that show?
Yep.
Yeah, they're not even good gimmicks either.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
But when you watch and get going, and my six-year-old was like, oh, that's cool. So I was like, okay, seeing it through his eyes, this is fun.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
But, yeah, and of course, it's on Hulu, so.
Yeah, fair.
Best of luck, guys.
Screw you.
Well, I'm sure it's a, I'm sure, but it might be available somewhere in Canada, but, yeah. Maybe
it's
one of our.
Well, I've seen it, so it's available, Chris. It's just, you know, how desperate are you to see it?
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to the last segment of the show, and that's our Ender segment, where we discuss topics of current pop culture news. The only thing I have, unfortunately, is some sad news for this episode, and that is the news that Ian Holm passed away at the age of 88. He was the original, for me, best known as the original Bilbo Baggins from the original Lord of the Rings trilogy, Frodo's uncle. Unfortunately, yes, he passed away. But, I mean, he's been in a lot of other movies and shows and all sorts of stuff. But I remember best as Bilbo. All right, do you gentlemen have anything else you wanted to throw out there for Enders?
Nope.
Quick thing.
Okay.
I'm not sure with as many things that are closed and all still, but my local comic shop is very upset with DC now.
Oh, DC, yeah.
Is split from Diamond.
Oh, that's true. But isn't Diamond like an evil corporation or some crap? Like, that they've got a stranglehold on everything, right?
They got a
monopoly, and they're overpricing things or something, from what I understand, from some sort of documentary I watched at some point.
So Diamond is the monopoly for it. The last time anyone's tried to split off was Marvel tried to have their own distributor, Heroes World, in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And they were completely out of the previous catalog, and you had to get two catalogs now and two shipments. And within a year, they were back because it was too much to support it themselves. Which is kind of what DC's doing now. Look, yes, Diamond's a monopoly, but also no one else has asked to step in. Like, the amount of money and warehouses and people and investment and all it would take to be a competitor, no one's wanted.
Yeah.
So
that's what
they're
a lot
not
of, like,
stopping anyone.
No, I mean, McFarlane even came out and said that he even thought about it, but he said it'd be stupid. It'd just be a waste of money and time.
Yeah. It's but DC, like, when everything shut down and the Diamond's like, oh, we can't ship and we can't make payments, said, all right, they took Midtown Comics in New York City, and I forget the West Coast one, and said, you two are going to distribute our comics from now on. They're sent out Mondays, so stores can put them up Tuesdays. But every other company comes out Wednesdays. Every comic store now needs to do two shipments, which means you're paying for two things of shipping, no more combined shipping for your big orders. Mm-hmm. And then they just announced every other DC thing, like the graphic novels and all, will also be going through this. So there will be nothing DC left in previews. So comic shops are just like, we're already like shoestring, you know, profit here, if not less. And now we have this whole extra thing that we need to create an account for, create orders for, have an extra shipping charge, all this for your number two publisher. Like, of course we got it. It's not like, you know, some company that puts out one book a month did it. So I was talking to my shop owner while she's like, I can't stand them right now, but what am I going to do? Tell my customers I can't get Batman? No, of course I'm going to get Batman. I'm going to have to deal with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's unfortunate. Yeah.
And then I saw shops, because the DC books they can put out Tuesday, but everyone else ships on Tuesday with the theory that you get it ready on Tuesday and can have it out Wednesday. They're just like, screw it, everything's here Tuesday now.
Yeah.
I'm not going to deal with it. I'm not going to tell my customers to come twice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's such a difficult situation. Because, like, yeah, on the one hand, Diamond, you know, like, they've had some pretty shady practices over the years. But at the same time, unless someone's willing to actually step up and work with all the other companies, if it's just one company going it alone, it's just going to create turmoil.
And no one wants to do the single issues, because, like, Barnes & Noble, Chapters, Books A Million, you know, anything like that, they can get graphic novels in. Those are considered books. They go through your book supplier. But the single issues is all Diamond. So even they don't want to deal with this.
Yep. And then, yeah, like you said, with comic stores already having a hard time making ends meet, this does not help at all.
No, I was thrilled. My wife went up to me yesterday, and I have a pull list at my local store, but it's like a half hour away is my closest one. And she's like, when's your stuff coming? I said, it comes in next Wednesday. She's like, okay, as long as you're going that way, I want you to pick up a couple of things in that town. we'll make your whole journey worth it there. Yep. Even she's like, go ahead, get your stuff there, because I know how upset you're going to be if the closest one is gone during all of this.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, it's frustrating, you know. But on the other hand, like, Diamond, yeah, like, when the COVID and all that kind of hit, you know, like, yeah, they just threw their hands up and were like, yep, sorry, you know, we're shutting down for, you know, the next couple months. You know, and at least DC was trying, right? So.
Yeah, and that's the thing. DC's like, all right, screw you, we'll send out our own stuff.
Yeah.
Problem was, for a lot of those places, they're like, well, we can't open, so I don't know who you're sending it to. And they started sending it to, like, the store owner's home addresses.
Yep.
And then you see comic shops on, like, their Facebook page or Twitter, Instagram, or whatever, going, hey, I have these comics. If anyone wants to schedule a curbside pickup, I guess we can do that, but I can't let you in.
Yep, exactly.
It's this giant learning curve.
Yeah. Okay. And if we get a second wave, like, you know, like they're predicting in the fall, it's going to happen again, right? Where stores probably have to shut down, right?
Well, U.S., it's looking more like we're just still in the first wave.
Yeah. There's just never going to be a second wave because the first wave just won't end.
Just keep coming.
Yeah, unfortunately. But anywho, I guess we could call this an episode. So let's play that little game of where can we find you on the internet. And Richard, where can we find you, sir?
Well, this will be quick. Here, guesting from time to time. I don't really have much else going on. I occasionally pop up on my buddy's podcast, The Graveyard Shift Horror Podcast, with Mike and guest. It used to be Sheldon and Mike. Now it's Mike and guest, or Mike and Eric. I think he's got a guy, Eric, that's been his co-host there
mostly full-time for the past few months as he searches for a full-time replacement. So if you love horror movies, go check out that podcast. It's fun. He does a lot of schlocky, weird, funny ones, but he also does some interviews here and there. He talked to Lloyd Kaufman not too long ago to interview him. If anybody knows who he is, he's the creator of The Toxic Avenger, things like that. Kind of a pioneer in his area, as it were. And yeah, so you can find me at Graveyard Shift Horror Podcast or here on the Pop Culture Pub Podcast.
Excellent. Jason, where can we find you, sir?
As always, nerdylifeofmine.com. It has all the links and everything to Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and it's just currently mostly just doing my Middle Earth challenge.
Excellent. And Kevin, where can we find you, sir?
You can find me, my own writing is masthelibrary.com, at masthelibrary across most social media. You can find me sharing Jason stuff usually when I go through and read a bunch of it in one chunk, and then Jason sharing my stuff too. You can listen to the
House Show podcast and hear.
You can listen to my podcast over in Retro Network, a retro wrestling podcast called The House Show, and hear Rich's name mentioned every episode on that.
Oh yeah,
we do episodes every Thursday, and then I'm just usually causing trouble somewhere.
Excellent. All right. As for myself, I am hosting this podcast, Pop Culture Pub. Sorry, I'm just multitasking at this moment. I'll stop doing that.
You seen came up on Frankenstein General. It's all right.
Aside from these regular episodes, I have been doing episodes of the Pop Culture Pub where it's the Deep Space Nine discussion panel, where it's me and three friends from the Vulcan convention. We've gotten together and we are discussing Deep Space Nine. Right now we did season 4.0, so it's the first 13 episodes of season 4, and then our next episode will be the last 13 episodes of season 4.5. And then the plan going forward is eventually we're going to move on to Star Trek Enterprise. Then we're going to move on to Babylon 5. And then we're going to move on to Lost. So, yeah, basically.
That's, wow.
Yeah.
That's quite the path there.
Yeah, like we've literally got the next year and a half mapped out. And you know, the boys on the panel, they're pumped about it. So, yeah, we're having a good time. Awesome. And aside from those, we're doing these episodes, our regular episodes as well. So our next episode, that gets back to my multitasking, again, we're going to visit the podcast time machine, and we're going to talk about Saturday morning cartoons and cereal. So we're going to reminisce about Saturday morning cartoons of days gone by and the cereals we used to eat while watching these cartoons. And then after that, we will be... our next episode that we will be doing is the state of Star Wars, where we're going to be reminiscing about the current state of Star Wars. So we'll be talking about the sequel trilogy. We'll be talking about The Mandalorian. We'll be talking about the current books, the current animation, and our thoughts on the future of Star Wars. And, yeah, aside from that, you can check out my blog at randomnerdist.blogspot.com. All right, so on behalf of myself, Chris Lockhart, and Kevin Decent and Jason Roberts and Richard Reeder, I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. This was our podcast time machine summer 1990 episode, and we will see you again in the not too distant future. Good night.
Then the heroes four. In this day and age, who could ask for more? The crime wave is high, with muggings mysterious. All police and detectives are furious, cause they can't find the source of this lethally evil force. This is serious, so give me a quarter. I was a witness, give me a report. Call April O'Neil in on this case, and you better hurry up, there's no time to wait. We need help right quick on the double, have pity. on a city, man, it's in trouble. We need heroes like the Lone Ranger when Tonto came pronto, when there was danger. They didn't say we'd be there in half an hour, cause they displayed triple power. Reporter was hot on the trail, determined to put these crooks in jail. She spied the bad guys and saw what happened, but before she knew it, she fell in a trap and got caught. Yeah, she was all alone, with no friends and no phone. Now this was beyond her worst dreams, cause she was cornered by some wayward teens. Headed by Shredder, they were anything but good. Misguided on love, they called them the foot. They could terrorize and be angry youth, and they'd love the people who needed truth. Then from out of the dark came an awesome sight, shouting cowabunga as they hit the ground. From the field of weeds, the heroes rescued the flower, cause they possessed Can you stand for what you believe in? Find the strength to do what's right? That's true. Heroes on a half shell, they're on a mission. When there's a battle, got the enemy wishing that they stayed at home. Instead of fighting these ninja masters with moves like lightning, they're once normal, but now the mutants. Splinter's the teacher, so they are the students. Leonardo, Michelangelo, and Donatello make up the team with one other fellow, Raphael. He's the leader of the group, transformed from the norm by the nuclear goop. Pizza's the food that's sure to please. These ninjas are into pepperoni and cheese. Back to the story, it's not hard to find. Ninjas not just of the body, but of the mind. Those were the words that the master instructed. But a letter from Shredder had Splinter abducted. That was the last straw, spring into action. Step on the foot, now the gauntlet was traction. Now this is for real, so you fight for justice. Your shell is hard, so you shout, they can't dust us all. Like some old coffee table, since you've been born, you've been willing and able to defeat the snake, protect the weak, fight for rights and your freedom is free. Now the villain is chilling, so you make a stand. Back to the wall, put your sword in your hand. Remember the words of your teacher, your master. Evil moves fast, but good moves faster than light. Shining for your illumination. Good versus evil equals confrontation. So when you're in trouble, don't give in and go sour. Try to rely on your triple power.
Kids.